Welcome to 15 Minutes of Problem Solving Discussion with Fred Kuhn and our next guest.
Welcome, everybody, to Workplace Strategies. We have a great show today. We're going to talk about ageism in the workplace, what it is, why it's important, why you can't ignore it. And our guest today is Patty Temple Rocks. Patty is an expert on this area and has delivered a new thought-provoking book on the hidden taboo topic in every workplace, and that's age. So, Patty, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much, Fred. Happy to be with you.
Good. Everybody, you can read Patty's bio on the guest biography section of the website. So, Patty, let's get right into it. Why'd you write your book?
Frankly, exactly as you introduced me, because it was a taboo topic, and I felt like it was time to make sure that it is no longer a taboo topic. And candidly, I also observed it, and I had observed it happening in the workplace for about a decade before I put pen to paper on this topic. And when it first started, it happened actually to someone very close to me who was a boss, a mentor, had become a friend, and I watched her workplace, where she had achieved, frankly, the highest level of success, pinnacle of success, the first woman in the executive ranks, being sort of marginalized and pushed aside. I write about her in my book, Angelina, not her real name, of course, but it was completely inexplicable to me because she was at the top of her game, contributing a lot of value, and I didn't really understand it. I took the advantage of a social business opportunity where I was with the CEO, her boss, and basically just came right out and asked him, what's going on with Angelina? This doesn't make sense. How can I help? And his first answer kind of put me off because it was, well, don't you see this could be good for you? And I thought, well, if he's implying that I would get her job, that's not what I want. And secondly, his next answer kind of floored me because he said, and you know, I think she's just tired. And anybody who knew Angelina would know that that's not ever a word you'd use to describe her. It wasn't then. It isn't now. I didn't understand at the time, you know, this was 10 years or so ago, that that was a euphemism or a way of describing ageism. But I knew it wasn't true. So I think my spidey senses, as they say, were way up, and I just started to see it more and more often and recognized some of the subtle ways of doing it. And at that point, you know, became super, frankly, selfishly motivated that I wasn't going to let it happen to me and that I was going to be prepared so that when it did, I would be ready to move on to my next career, which I think is a really good strategy for some people. But it wasn't for me because I wasn't ready to do something different. I still wanted to be in the thick of the game and in the same game I was at. And so my book is focused a little bit differently in that I'm basically challenging business to change, not individuals. So that's why I wrote the book.
Let me give you an example. I just talked with a client the other day who works in the Bay Area. She's 57 years old. And the terms that are used in our generation, we deal more directly with conflict. We deal more directly with our understanding of the world around us, and we communicate that. And some of the young people take offense at some of the words that we use because that's the way they were raised. Those are offensive words. So it's ageism, and she's old and all of that. Well, I have to admit, when I was 19 years old, anybody over 50 to me was old. So I understand what she's saying, but I'm so glad that you have focused on this because it is a problem in the workplace.
Well, it is. And if, you know, I don't know how old you are. I'm 59. And so I agree with you. When I was 19, I thought 59 was old. And obviously some of this is our perspectives change, but some of it is it has truly changed. I mean, we are living a life expectancy that is a good decade or two longer than previous generations. We are healthier, both physically and mentally. And I mean, on a pure practical level, I sometimes look at this. So if the stereotypical age of old in people's mind or retirement in people's mind is 50s and 60s, and we're now living to 90, what are we going to do for all those years? And how are we going to afford to do it for all of those years? Society has to change the expectations about what is old and about how long people want to work. And I'm sure you know this, but one of the statistics I write in my book is that if you ask a millennial when they think they're going to retire, versus asking a boomer when they think they're going to acquire. There's about 10 to 15 year gap in that. And by the way, the millennials will change their mind when they get older. They just will. I mean, it's just human nature to think that you're going to want to retire a lot younger than you actually do.
Unless you're grabbing the brass ring in the Bay Area or some other place, you're not going to have Social Security to support you like those in the boomer generation do. And so you're going to have to work longer and you're going to be old and there's be another generation looking at you as old. It's a real cycle and it needs to be addressed, I believe. So what can business... Yeah, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Well, no, I was just going to give you a Bay Area example that I wrote about in my book that I think you might enjoy and your listeners. There was a woman who I interviewed who worked for a tech company and was doing really well. She went there late. I mean, she didn't start out there right away. She was in her, I think, late 30s or 40, early 40s when she started the job. And she was really doing well and was assigned solo project management, you know, a lot of things, and people trusted her and liked her and enjoyed her. And she said, you know, I admit I look younger than I am. I'm blessed with the genes that sort of make me look younger. So one of her children sent her a happy birthday bouquet on her 50th birthday to work. And it said, you know, happy 50th birthday. And she said she literally felt a change in the way that people started treating her. And she said, and it wasn't like they weren't nice or anything, but all of a sudden people, instead of asking me for my input on projects, were asking me like what face cream I used to look so young or, you know, some of those things. And she said, I just found, and then she said, I suddenly started getting assigned co-leaders to my projects. And she said, I really believe that it all started with the 50th balloon birthday bouquet. So, you know, her lesson is if you're going to work in one of these, you know, and some industries are, I think, more ageist than others. But if you're going to work in the tech industry, be prepared because they're ageist.
That's correct. You know, ageism is real. It's widespread. It's insidious. And the largest demographic America's ever seen is baby boomers. And now they're experiencing the same thing. They're experiencing age discrimination at work. And what I'm going to ask you is, what can business leaders do differently to make sure their organization is not ageist?
There's, frankly, a lot that they can do, which I think is the good news. And I think most of it is relatively easy. So I'm an optimist by nature. So I have chosen to believe that, like a lot of isms, you know, racism, sexism, all the rest of that, it's an unconscious bias. And so I do believe that a lot of workplaces are being unintentionally ageist. So I have a chapter in my book called The Mirror Test, and it's basically an opportunity for businesses to take an honest look at what they're doing and what they could do to change that. And some of the things, as I said, are super subtle. But if you look at even the external presence that you're putting out there, a lot of websites are full of only younger people. As workplaces, I think that we've done a very good job of taking on showing, making sure that we have men and women and making sure that we have all races identified. But we're not doing the same things right now to make sure that we're showing that all ages are represented in the workplace.
That's very true. When you pull up the LinkedIn sign-in page, all those people are under 30 years old or 32.
Exactly. And I think, you know, I came from the advertising agency, public relations agency world. And so this is a really small example, but I think it's an important example because it shows how easy it is to change certain things. I realized that we were constantly having social outings that you would say, who will plan this? And typically it was millennials or even younger that were volunteering to plan the social outing. And they were planning them sort of in their own image. And so one of the things that I realized is that millennials and younger people like to dress up in costumes. So all of our parties tended to have a theme. Our holiday party sometimes was themed like dress like a lumberjack or wear your ugly sweater or, you know, things like that. And those were not, I mean, it's so not a big deal. But that's a really good example of something that boomers were just sort of not as comfortable with. It just wasn't sort of their thing. And so I challenged my team to come up with a age-neutral party. And it turned out that everybody had more fun. You know, it was a party that was purposely designed to be inclusive to all of the ages that were represented in the workforce. So again, really small example. It's as simple as just sort of paying attention and being aware that perhaps you are unconsciously creating an ageist environment.
If you could speak to all the HR directors in the United States, what's the one thing you would tell them to do to begin to address this issue?
I think it's honestly as simple and as direct as make sure that your diversity and inclusion strategy and approach includes age, because the majority do not. And there was a study that came out about, it was 80% of CEOs believe that ageism is not included in their diversity and inclusion strategy. So I would say to HR, if I'm a CEO, I kind of think that's your job. Like, I want you to do that. I want you to make sure that I'm, you know, doing the things that I should do. And so I think that HR can be a problem solver hero in the eyes of their leadership and management by taking this on and making sure that they're doing, you know, that they're doing the right things. And, you know, when I talk directly to HR people, which I did frequently for my book, you know, I would ask them point blank, like, when you are doing D&I training, how often is ageism included? You know, and not so much recognizing ageism, but it's also just working with people, having an age variety in your workplace, and what can you do to maximize the benefits of that and minimize the challenges of that? And most of the HR people I talked to just simply weren't doing that. So I think that's something that they can definitely do. Another thing, and I want to talk about this because it's the polka dotted elephant in the room, is money. So it is not, you know, surprising that most people believe that ageism is largely driven by the cost of older workers. And that when organizations are looking to cut costs, which of course, who isn't, at some point in their history, they will automatically, their eyes are going to be drawn to the highest salaries. And, you know, not surprising that many times those largest salaries belong to people who are older, because they've been in the workplace a long time and they have earned the right to sort of make some of those higher salaries. But as I say to like everybody, nobody earns the right to have a job no matter what. And nobody earns the right to keep making a high salary if they're not delivering value. So at no point do I think any of us are entitled to our job, but I think that to just sort of marginalize or get rid of somebody because they're making a high salary without really looking at the value that they bring, which in some cases is not always in their job description. It sometimes comes from the mentoring and the experience that they've had. But another important thing to consider as you're looking at somebody's salary is they may recognize that that salary is no longer appropriate for the work that they need to do for the organization. I interviewed a lot of people from my book who had been impacted by this, had either been literally pushed out or were feeling that way. And every interview, I asked two questions. First, I wanted to make sure that I was, frankly, on to the right subject. And so I would say, do you think I'm crazy or is ageism a thing? Well, won't surprise you, you know, given your work, but 100% ageism is a thing. What may surprise you is when I asked them if they felt salary was an obstacle and they answered yes, I said, would you have been willing to consider an alternative that allowed you to keep working in your workplace for less money? And that was also 100%. Every one of them said, if they would have talked to me about it, I would have been open. Because what practically happens to these people is they end up without a job anyway. And so the income goes away. Now they're going to be looking for a job in the workplace at a difficult time. You know, the big true statement is the only thing worse than losing your job over 55 is trying to find another one. And so now they're in the marketplace trying to find another job. Most people, you know, who've managed to earn in the higher segment of the earning structure are willing to take less money. They don't need to keep earning at that level. They just want to keep earning. They want to keep earning. They want to keep getting health insurance. They want to keep doing work that they love. They want to feel valued in a workplace. For older workers, it is less about the climb and the salary bumps and more about the other non-tangible benefits that come from the work.
Do you think that companies would take the other view? And that is, I'll play the devil's advocate here. Do you think the companies would say, well, they're going to be depressed, they're not going to produce as much because they're going to be unhappy, they feel they're, if we cut their salary, they're not going to fit in very well because they're going to be unhappy?
I think that's a legitimate concern, but there's an easy way around it. And that is, I do not propose that what businesses do is go to these older workers and cut their salary and then tell them. I am proposing that it should be part of career planning, and we need to spend as much time planning the back end as we do the front end, where we are having this conversation with the employee, where we are able to honestly say to them, you know, the needs of our organization are this. Your skill is this, but it doesn't make sense for us to pay at this level anymore. And so these are some other options that we've thought of. Or maybe you have some other suggestions of how we're doing it. So I think that the difference is involving the employee in the discussion. And this doesn't mean that, you know, I'm not suggesting it's a free-for-all and the employee gets to decide what they want. I mean, it may not have a it may end in a way, you know, the company has to do what's right for the company. And companies are business, and I totally get that. I just think that because they are so afraid to have the conversation, they don't have it. And you'll never come up with an answer if you don't have the conversation. And I have a couple of examples that I wrote about in my book where it ended up being such a win-win for the company and the person, but that never would have happened without a forward-thinking leader was willing to engage with the potentially impacted employees.
Folks, we've spent wonderful time here with Patty Temple Rocks. Patty, your book is called I'm Not Done, and it's an Amazon bestseller. I would suggest everybody read it. Good book. So, Patty, thank you very much for being on the show today, and we'll put your biography up on the guest biography section with your contact information, and I'm sure folks will get a hold of you.
Thanks for joining us. If you wish to speak with Fred or you want a transcript of this interview, send an email to podcast@stuartcoopercoon.com. See you soon.